Hello and welcome to a new edition of RAE, Radio Difusión Argentina al Exterior. This is the foreign service of the Argentine Radio, transmitting from the city of Buenos Aires via the shortwaves of WRMI, Miami Radio International, and also via internet on rae.com.ar. This is Fernando Farias speaking, and together with sound technician Sergio Rios, we'll be bringing you this show for Tuesday, October 29, 2024, with news, with sports, with music. Today we'll have a feature on the tradition of the Pachamama that is observed every August and welcomes the beginning of the sowing season in the Andes region. And it's a very beautiful tradition that is still observed in Bolivia, Peru, northern Chile, northern Argentina. We'll be sharing with you this piece as part of today's program. And we'll also be paying homage to an important figure of Latin American music, a Cuban singer who is turning 94 today, and we'll be playing a song by her in just a minute. If you want to get in touch with us, send an email to qslrai@gmail.com or a letter to Maipú Street 555, and then of course Buenos Aires, Argentina. We are broadcasting via the frequency of 5850 kHz, and also via internet on rai.com.ar, plus our app for mobile devices that you can download for free, Digital RAE for Android and Apple phones. Let's get started now with the news. These are the headlines. Foreign Minister Diana Mondino confirms intention to resume flights to the Malvinas Islands. Transport unions to strike tomorrow and the day after against Milei's policies. Ecuador seeks help from Colombia due to energy crisis. Bolivian government denies former President Evo Morales was a victim of an assassination attempt. Argentina stops printing its own banknotes. Sports. For the second consecutive year, Argentine Emiliano Martinez, El Dibu, wins the Goalkeeper of the Year award. And these are the news. According to Foreign Minister Diana Mondino, conditions are in place to resume flights between the Malvinas Islands and the city of Córdoba. She stated this to British newspaper Financial Times. Between 2019 and 2020, let's recall, Chilean airline LATAM operated a flight from São Paulo in Brazil with a monthly stopover in Córdoba, Argentina. The connection was interrupted during the pandemic and was not reinstated due to the tensions between London and the government of former President Alberto Fernández. However, with Javier Milei's arrival at the Casa Rosada, Argentine-British relations improved. In this context, Mondino and her UK counterpart, David Lammy, met in September in New York and agreed to resume flights. They also resolved to coordinate a new trip for relatives to the Darwin Cemetery on the islands, where the remains of those who fell during the 1982 are buried. The Malvinas are and will always be Argentine. The mainland and the islands should have better connections nonetheless, Mondino told Financial Times. Transport unions will strike tomorrow and the day after in rejection of Milei's policies. This Wednesday there will be no flights, trucks, taxis, subways or boats, even though bus services will indeed operate, but the latter's drivers for their part will strike on the following day, Thursday, for 24 hours. During the first day of this direct action, state workers will also be joining in. The transportation table, which groups the sector's unions, stated that their strike is due to the decline in the purchasing power of salaries, quote-unquote. They also oppose privatization projects promoted by Casa Rosada, such as one that would affect the state airline Aerolíneas Argentinas. This is not the time to talk to the government. We need to confront them, because they are not listening to our demands. This was said by the Teamsters' Pablo Moyano. Meanwhile, bus drivers will protest on Thursday due to, they say, the lack of agreement to increase salaries, as explained by their representing union, the UTA. Transportation employers claim in turn that they cannot raise wages because of the ongoing country's economic situation. Milei's government rejected in turn the strike, and a spokesperson quoted by the TN channel stated that there are no reasons for the protest. The same source suggested that there are unionists complicating people's lives behind this strike. Ecuador is asking for help from Colombia due to the ongoing energy crisis facing the country, with daily power cuts lasting up to 14 hours. During an interview, Ecuadorian President Daniel Noboa sought assistance from his Colombian peer Gustavo Petro to address this situation. The two leaders will meet this Tuesday in Cali, Colombia, during the United Nations COP16 summit on global warming. "We would be very grateful for the help," Mr. Noboa said. The Colombian president, for his part, had expressed on social media that it was time that all the brotherly peoples of Latin America show their solidarity with Ecuador. Ecuadorian authorities explain that the crisis is due to the worst drought in 60 years, which is affecting the hydroelectric plants that generate nearly all of the country's energy. The Bolivian government has put into question the former president Evo Morales' claim of an assassination attempt against him. In a press conference, government minister Eduardo Castillo declared, "Mr. Morales, no one believes the performance you have put on." The official even accused the former president of wanting to kill a police officer. On Sunday, the ex-head of state claimed he was the victim of a shooting on the vehicle he was traveling in on his way to a radio studio in Cochabamba. But Castillo stated yesterday that police were shot at from Morales' convoy after refusing to slow down. Argentina has stopped printing its own banknotes for the first time since the late 19th century. The Milei administration has decided that the mint will cease issuing legal tender and will only produce vehicle license plates and documents. According to local media, the Casa Rosada made this decision due to their inability, they said, to supply 1,000 and 2,000 pesos banknotes in a timely manner. These notes are of low denomination of approximately between $1 and $2. Higher value notes, such as the 10,000 peso notes, are already being printed abroad, mainly in China. As reported by the press on Tuesday, mint authorities have informed the staff that will be left without any duties to take on pending vacations. And now, sports. Argentine Emiliano Dibu Martinez has won the award for the best goalkeeper in the world for the second consecutive year. The player from the national team and Aston Villa was honored in Paris with the Yashin Trophy during the Ballon d'Or ceremony, which was won by Spain's Rodri. Dibu received the statuette from his countryman and Albiceleste teammate Lautaro Martinez, and it is worth mentioning that the Inter striker ranked 7th in the Ballon d'Or the standings. During the gala, the goalkeeper, born in Mar del Plata, emphasized that his individual achievements are a result of collective effort. In this regard, he dedicated the Yashin Award to his teammates and coaches. "The only thing that matters to me is the team, Aston Villa and the national team. I work every day to be at this level," Dibu stated. And these were the news on RAE, Radiodifusión Argentina al Exterior.
RAE, Argentina al Mundo.
RAE, Argentina, 面向世界.
RAE, Argentina vers le monde.
RAE, Argentina to the world.
RAE, 世界に向けて, Argentina.
RAE, Argentina al Mundo.
La RAE, Argentina al Mondo.
RAE, Argentinian in the Welt.
RAE, Argentina al Mundo.
And today is the birthday of a legend of Cuban music. I'm talking about Omar Aportuondo, who's turning 94, an icon of the Caribbean nation's culture, and noted for being a member of the Buena Vista Social Club. I'm pretty sure you are familiar with the group because of the film that was released in the late 1990s about this historic ensemble of Cuban artists, the Buena Vista Social Club, a film directed by Wim Wenders, if I'm not wrong, in which American guitarist Ry Cooder travels to the island with his son to put together again this band that was integrated, among others, by the late Compay Segundo, Ibrahim Ferrer, Elías Ochoa, and the most notable female member of the group was Omar Aportuondo, who's turning 94 today. So in order to honor her, we're gonna be playing a track of by her singing a tango song. So this is Cuba's Omar Aportuondo singing an Argentine tune, Nieblas del Riachuelo, classic tango song that is about the fog, the mist of the Riachuelo, the river that lies to the south of the city of Buenos Aires, where the neighborhood of La Boca is located, and it inspired numerous songs. The most famous, I think, is this one, Nieblas del Riachuelo, that describes the port of La Boca. Well, this is the rendition of that track by Omar Aportuondo on her 94th birthday. And after this music, we'll have our feature on the Pachamama celebrations.
Turbio fondeadero, donde van a recalar barcos que en el muelle para siempre han de quedar. Sombras que se alargan en la noche del dolor. Náufragos del mundo que han perdido el corazón. Puentes y cordajes donde el viento viene a aullar. Barcos carboneros que jamás van a zarpar. Sordo cementerio de las naves que al morir sueñan sin embargo que hacia el mar han de partir. Niebla del Riachuelo, amarrado a un recuerdo te sigo esperando. Niebla del Riachuelo, de ese amor para siempre me vas alejando. Nunca más volvió, nunca más lo vi, nunca más su amor nombró mi nombre junto a mí. Esa misma voz que dijo adiós. Niebla del Riachuelo, amarrado a un recuerdo te sigo esperando. Niebla del Riachuelo, de ese amor para siempre me vas alejando. Nunca más volvió, nunca más lo vi, nunca más su amor nombró mi nombre junto a mí. Esa misma voz que dijo adiós.
RAE, Argentina al mundo.
RAE, Argentina, 面向世界.
RAE, Argentina vers le monde.
RAE, Argentina to the world.
RAE, 世界に向けて Argentina.
RAE, Argentina al mundo.
RAE, Argentina al mundo.
RAE, Argentinian in die Welt.
RAE, Argentina al mundo.
Lies at the foot of the central Andes mountain range in Peru, some 4,000 meters above sea level. For thousands of years, the people here have shown the remarkable human ability of adapting to changing environments, reaping nutritionally complete sustenance from the most infertile fields, and making the most of their decidedly sparse natural resources. Seemingly endless and arid expanse is Lake Titicaca, where, according to legend, the sun slips beneath the waves each day at dusk. The first men were born here, and their descendants, those of black blood, live on islands made of reeds. Several powerful civilizations built magical cities here, one of which is Machu Picchu, the Inca's magnificent secret treasure trove, ensconced in high mountain valleys and undiscovered for generations. Spirituality is the key to how the people of the Altiplano understand the world. Life is possible solely through the veneration of the sun and Mother Earth. In Cusco, thousands of people congregate each year to celebrate Corpus Christi. In Hoyada de Sinacara, pilgrims risk their lives on the icy crags to praise God. The Christian God, or also the gods of the people who had inhabited these lands for countless generations. Long before the Spanish conquistadors arrived to baptize into a new world, an old world as ancient and wise as humanity itself. The high plateau, at the very heart of the Andes, borders on Argentina, Chile, Bolivia, and Peru. According to legend, humanity first appeared on the banks of Lake Titicaca many thousands of years ago. Those first men worshipped the gods who had given them life, Inti, the god of the sun, and La Pachamama, Mother Earth. Numerous discoveries throughout the region have shed much light on the very close and extremely intense relationships those ancient people shared with their gods. Still today, we can retrace the steps of those ancient religions through the legends and folklore kept alive by the many indigenous communities of the Altiplano. There are also important archaeological sites, such as Tiahuanaco, the imperial capital of the megalithic civilization that dominated this region over 3,500 years ago. The architects of this imperial city possessed an excellent sense of urban planning know-how. They created ornate temples and remarkable works of art. Among them, this portico, the Gate of the Sun, sculpted from a single block of stone weighing over 10 tons. Since then, the Altiplano has witnessed the birth, dominion, and disappearance of numerous civilizations. The last was the Incan Empire, whose most valuable legacy is Machu Picchu, undeniably one of the most spectacular and fascinating human creations in the world. For centuries, Machu Picchu was a lost city, a legend where the treasures of an empire were supposedly hidden. And when explorers finally discovered it, they found neither gold nor silver. What they did find, however, was an invaluable architectonic jewel, one duly recognized as a World Heritage Site by UNESCO in the late 1990s. On the island of the Sun, Acayahuaya, heir to the Incan traditions, invokes Inti, the sun god. This is an ancient ritual based on a legend, according to which the sun god falls in love with the lake and decides to rest in the embrace of its watery depths. The city of La Paz is over 3,600 meters above sea level. It is the biggest city on the Altiplano. La Paz was founded by the Spanish conquistadors, but most of today's residents are of solidly indigenous origin. The white man tried to impose his religion, which gave rise to a fusion of Christian and pagan elements that is currently deeply rooted throughout the Altiplano. From the most crowded residential areas in the big cities to the remotest island villages of Lake Titicaca. The island of Taquile represents the last living vestige of the Incan Empire. It is the only place in Titicaca where Quechua, the imperial language of the Incans, is still spoken, and the only place in the world where certain norms and customs from that era still govern daily life. The island is divided into four districts called suyus, each governed by a jilicata. In their attempt to eradicate pre-Columbian beliefs, the Spanish conquistadors employed many cunning tricks. One of them was to celebrate with great religious solemnity Christian feasts on the days the pagans considered sacred in honor of their own deities. Over time, the inhabitants of this island, for example, began to identify with the sacred symbols of both beliefs, leading to a kind of conversion, in a formal sense at least, from paganism to the religion of the Spaniards brought from Europe. Each year, coinciding with the Christian feast of the Pentecost, Taquile celebrates its own special feast day in honor of the potato seed. This is a ritual of Incan origin, held in Chuñopampa Square, the corners of which have altars venerating Jesus Christ, the Virgin Mary, and the Christian saints. The island is divided into two teams, north versus south, and no error goes unnoticed in their annual dance competition. The team committing the least mistakes wins, and it is assumed that their part of the island will enjoy the year's best potato harvest. hours pass, the ritual transforms into a communal fest. The coca leaves and traditional liquors naturally take a certain effect on the dancers. As night falls, the competition comes to an end, but the celebration continues. According to the Southern Hemisphere's calendar, winter and its dark skies will soon muscle in on the sun's territory. The Taquileños dance so their Star King won't forget to return in the spring. Tequila's most important industry is textiles. Its fabrics are considered the finest in all Peru, and the entire population strives to maintain the region's legendary traditions. They say that in ancient times, artisans here wove magical cloaks, enabling people to fly. It seems improbable these garments might promise that much, but truly exquisite items have been discovered, some adorned with images of winged men, in the funerary bundles from the Paracas era. The cloth makers of Taquile are considered the best in the world. This is one of the few places on Earth where the creation of fabrics is considered the exclusive domain of men. The obligation of every man here is to weave a cap whose colors indicate his marital status, and a belt with a calendar-like depiction of the most important dates in his life. But this is actually the final step in a long preparatory process. After learning about plant fibers, how to make dyes from natural products, and mastering the island's unique ornamental designs. This is an invaluable tradition, one of humanity's finest achievements, as recognized by UNESCO's World Heritage Committee. The fame of these products has attracted more and more tourists, which has created a challenge of another kind. The increased demand has made it impossible to produce in the traditional way all the merchandise the market wants. So many retailers have begun selling industrial-made imitations that ultimately degrade the reputation of the authentic and justly famous tequila fabrics. Lake Titicaca, at over 9,000 square kilometers in area, is the high plateau's largest body of fresh water. It is the wellspring of all the life in the region, and understandably, a key protagonist in the legends explaining the origins of life in the Andes. These flexible, water-resistant bulrushes play a fundamental role in the life of the descendants of the mythological beings said to have reigned over the ancient world here. In the Peruvian part of Titicaca, there are numerous man-made islands fashioned from bulrush reeds, inhabited today by descendants of the Uros, the legendary tribe of black-blooded people who, according to age-old local lore, could never drown in the lake, which explains why they lived on the water. Nowadays, those superpowers don't hold much sway in the communities here. For these people's very existence is a precarious enterprise, day in and day out. Despite this, every morning the Uros go out on the lake in their reed boats, gather in circles, and cast their nets, most often just barely managing to provide the basic necessities for their families. Despite this, every morning the Uros go out on the lake in their reed boats, gather in circles, and cast their nets, most often just barely managing to provide the basic necessities for their families. Throughout the 20th century, the number of residents on these islands has steadily decreased. Currently, there are no more than 3,000 people living on the few islands that still exist. If things don't change, this culture will likely disappear, representing the extinguishing of a traditional lifestyle, tracing its roots back many thousands of years, practically to the onset of human history in South America. Economic difficulties forced the younger generations of Uros, those of the Black Blood, to abandon their islands for the coastal cities of Puno or Juli, where they can find buyers for their craft work or work at cattle fairs or in the fields. In the mid-20th century, this traditional feast was threatened with extinction because of the sharp decrease in the number of wild vicuña herds throughout the region. Fortunately, the National Council of South American Camels instituted effective measures, including the placing of armed guards in vicuña breeding areas. The results were spectacular. Over the ensuing 50 years, the herds increased from only 5,000 to over 140,000. The villages reap large profits from preserving the vicuña herds in their municipalities, while the wool they gather earns them even more income, allowing for an important textile industry to flourish. Before shearing the first animal, the wedding of the vicuña ceremony must be celebrated, involving the selection of the strongest and fittest animals. The priest's altar, covered with liquor bottles and coca leaves, becomes the nuptial bed on which the beasts will consummate their marriage, with the goal of assuring the fecundity of the females. After the wedding, a small incision is made in the animal's ears to extract a drop of blood, which will be offered to Pachamama so that she might protect the vicuña and allow the herds to grow ever more numerous year after year. Unlike vicuñas, llamas are domesticated animals. They are the largest cousins of the camel in the Andes. They are extremely resistant to cold and thirst, and their blood is especially adapted for living at high altitudes. The origin of this species is none too clear. Llamas do not exist in the wild, which is why it is believed that the inhabitants of the high plateau managed to domesticate some species of the guanaco family. The legends of the Andes offer a much simpler explanation. Llamas are the descendants of the two sons of Manco Capac, the founder of the Incan Empire, who were condemned to death but transformed into llamas by Viracocha in order to avoid punishment. The high plateau covers an immense area, stretching between Peru, Bolivia, Chile, and Argentina. It is an enormous plain uniting the two parallel mountain chains that make up the central Andes. The scenery is monotonous. A great plain is flanked by impressive snow-covered peaks the traditional home of the gods. The paths here are covered by countless piles of stones called huacas. Each stone is the offering of a traveler who has deposited it as a part of a vital gesture to please the deities. Once upon a time, many years ago, men dared to scale the heights to where the gods reside. The road was filled with obstacles, and many died in the attempt. From then on, the gods have permitted visits, but they demand as payment the sacrifice of a human life. That's how the old tradition of climbing up to the Sinacara High Basin started. It's a 12-kilometer trek over the Ocognate Glacier. It begins in the church of the village of Mahuayani, where the different brotherhood groups gather before setting out over the frozen route. This pilgrimage was originally meant as a kind of farewell celebration to the sun during the winter solstice. But mysteriously, the figure of Jesus Christ, known here as the Lord of Coyoriti, appeared to one of the townsmen, which, much to the relief of the colonial authorities, rapidly transformed the pagan celebration into a Christian one. Bit by bit, the entire route up to the Sinacara High Basin became adorned with Catholic symbols. Crosses were placed all along the route next to the traditional huacas, while at the end of the trek, a chapel was built. With a festive atmosphere, the different brotherhoods pass by the church in Mahuayani and begin the pilgrimage, which is extremely dangerous. Every year, at least one fatal accident must be mourned, which, according to tradition, is the human sacrifice demanded by the gods. Whatever the case may be, this is undoubtedly a feast with tremendously deep popular roots, bringing together thousands of people each year, and one at which it is impossible to distinguish the traditional pre-Columbian elements from those introduced by the European Catholic culture. The city of Cusco, whose name means the navel of the world, was the capital of the Incan Empire. According to legend, it was founded by the first men in an enclave shown to them by the god Inti. During Incan times, Cusco was given over to the cult of the sun. Thousands of worshippers would gather in its main square to celebrate the winter solstice. Centuries later, on the day of Corpus Christi, Cusco is once again the center of the world.
Es una lucha entre el amor fiel de Dios, empeñado en acercarse a su pueblo.
Just a few years after the arrival of the Spanish, the colonial authorities were overwhelmed by the fervor with which the Andean people participated at Christian celebrations.
Mediante el misterio de la encarnación del Verbo.
It had to be the Inca Garcilaso, a chronicler of mixed blood, who would explain that the Corpus coincided with the Andean feast days celebrated by the cult of the sun.
sacamos del mar.
El fruto de tu vientre, Jesús. Amén.
It is difficult to determine whether the Spanish orchestrated that coincidence of sacred dates or whether the natives decided to protect their beliefs under the guise of Christianity in order to save their lives. The Incas considered their leaders gods. The emperors were inaccessible beings, always surrounded by large entourages, dressed in ornate vestments and covered in gems and gold. It was complicated for them to substitute their living deities for the images recently come from Europe. The sacred Catholic figures were instantly associated with Inti, Pachamama, and the Apus, the spirits that lived in the mountains. Whatever actually led to this situation, one thing is true. It was simply compulsory to exalt those symbols, and any contradiction of their nature could have very serious consequences. Over the years, a mixed tradition blending the original pagan symbols and those from Catholicism transformed the day of Corpus Christi in Cusco into a unique celebration in all the world. The maximum splendor of Cusco and the Incan Empire had been reached some 100 years before the Spanish arrived. The fortress of Sacsayhuaman is one of the most noble vestiges of that ancient empire. Inside, next to the residence of the emperor, sat the Temple of the Sun, military buildings, arsenals, food warehouses, and a remarkable water supply system. Its dimensions and the quality of its construction deeply impressed the Spanish conquistadors, but they considered it a dangerous reminder of past Incan power and destroyed it. That is why today we can only marvel at these few still impressive walls. The arrival of the Spanish brought with it the rebuilding of Cusco, where new churches and palaces would occupy the center of the city. The cultural wealth of the city has made Cusco Peru's main tourist destination, providing a key source of income for its residents. Hotels, travel agencies, and of course, the traditional craftwork of the indigenous population. Narrow, winding streets and arcades are filled each day with rudimentary stalls and tables offering wool caps, ponchos, and ceramics for just a few dollars. But there are numerous local markets located beyond the typical tourist routes, where it is still possible to get a closer idea of the daily lives of the ancient culture of these modern-day people. It is still easy to find the foods held sacred across the high plateau, potatoes and corn, one of the fundamental pillars of development of all Andean civilizations. The cultivation of corn, also known as choclo or maize, began some 3,000 years ago, but its exact origin is a mystery, linking it with so many other legends of the origin of life in the Andes Mountains. Corn does not grow in the wild, having been literally created to satisfy the nutritional needs of human beings. Who created it, and when and how, are questions without answers, fitting perfectly into this world where the gods are behind everything. Made from this sacred foodstuff is chicha, a drink that is always present in all the social and religious acts of the Andean peoples. In every single town, there is a chicheria, or chicha distillery, such as this one, a humble courtyard where this homemade elixir is prepared. In the times of the Incan Empire, corn was a matter of state. After the soldiers came the mitimais, the colonists who took over the enterprise of cultivating it. The people of the Spanish conquest could grow tubers and garden produce, but the production of corn was exclusively reserved for the Incas and belonged to the emperor. The traditional elaboration of chicha is a long process, beginning with the moistening of the corn and then the puffing up of the grain as the cobs dry out. There are two types of chicha, tuctui y amor, reserved for the most solemn of ceremonies on the agricultural calendar, and jora, the most commonly consumed. In both cases, it is necessary to mill the grain in another long process into a kind of paste that will also grow much in body over many hours as it soaks in water. Each family has a secret recipe of its own, featuring different amounts of corn and how long it is cooked, which varies the texture and taste of the chicha. Finally, the drink is filtered and allowed to ferment, so it can attain its perfect alcoholic content. Chicha is drunk daily here, at any time, and in great quantities. It is a drink enjoyed by men and women alike, both old and young. Every chicha distillery will have a small counter and a few tables, so folks can come in and have a drink or two. All Andean communities have an essential sense of the gods. The owners of the animals, seated on each side of the priest, fashion thread from red wool. The Atomisayo recites a liturgy, ingests some coca leaves, and drinks a taste of liquor after offering a few drops to Pachamama. In this simple ceremony, the red threads are pinned on the ears of one male and one female alpaca. This is not to identify them, but to give them a small gift in thanks for all they will provide to the family. At 4,500 meters high, there are no roads here, but they wouldn't be of much help anyway. The amount of oxygen is so low up here that any type of combustion is difficult at best, With the internal type powering cars, trucks, or motorcycles, equally doomed with respect to the laws of physics. Horses remain the best form of transport here. Andean horses are small in size but strong and have great endurance. They are quite different from those that wreaked havoc on the Incan armies when the Spanish conquerors arrived. The low amount of oxygen, the aridity of the land, and the harsh climate have made agriculture here nothing less than a miracle. But in these climes, miracles are the order of the day and form part of the popular culture. Pachamama, in consolation for the hard life of her children, decided to give them the potato so they could feed themselves. The potato has been grown around Lake Titicaca for over 7,000 years. Its importance for life in the Andes was so great that time was measured as a function of how long it took to cook one. Peruvian farmers know all too well that each farm has its own characteristics when it comes to type of soil, the lay of the land, and the dominant winds, all of which determines which type of potato thrives best in each kind of field. When the harvest is ready, sacks of potatoes are packed on the backs of llamas. This is an image that has been repeated from time immemorial, year after year. On the backs of llamas, the potatoes were transported to merchant ships that would take them back to the old continent. In Europe, they were principally used for decoration at first. But after the 30 Years' War, when the population of Europe was saved from starvation through their cultivation, the potato gained the importance it has in modern times. Today it is raised in over 130 countries. It is one of the most consumed food products in the world, together with corn. Its importance has been recognized by the United Nations, which designated 2008 as the year of the potato. Likewise, it was the first product chosen by NASA to be grown in space. On the ranch, the whole family takes part in selecting the potatoes, separated according to size. The largest ones will be taken to market, while the smallest ones will be used to make flour through the oldest freeze-drying process known to man. To make flour, the potatoes are left outside for three winter nights. The tubers freeze and become dehydrated, allowing them to be stored for consumption throughout the year. At nightfall, inside the family abode, the Atomisayo responds to the doubts concerning the immediate future posed to him by means of an oracle called Cock's Fortune. Long before cocaine became a social blight in the West, coca leaves played a central role in the everyday lifestyle of the Andean communities. It is considered a gift from the gods due to its curative properties and effectiveness against heights. Also, its consumption allows the local medicine men to see the future. In any home in the high plateau, there is never the lack of a bed or food for a visiting traveler. Hospitality is an obligation and respected as law. The diet of these farmers is quite poor. It consists almost exclusively of potatoes and garden produce. Alpaca meat or mutton is a luxury consumed only on special occasions. Dinner serves to bring the entire family together. Parents and children sit around the simple table, a poignant symbol of the meager lifestyle of the highlands of Peru and Bolivia. The morning after, there is a blessing of the potatoes. The atomisayo extracts from within his pouch all the elements needed for the ceremony, and he begins a series of chants. The power of these priests is usually imbued with plants, other common substances, or animal bones from the valleys. The medicine men from the jungles, however, employ many other objects from the high plateau. The blessing concludes with the spraying of liquor to the four cardinal points of the globe and toasting with Pachamama, one's eyes fixed always on the mountains tracing the high horizon. When the Atomisayo finishes the blessing, he invites the family to gather with him in prayer. Everyone here partakes of coca leaves and alcoholic spirits in the belief that Pachamama will heed their prayers. The harvest marks the year's end and also the beginning of the coming year's ever new natural cycle. This is how it has been year after year for countless generations. Ever since man first appeared on the high plateau and began to seek the answers that would allow him to understand the magnificent world around him. A world in which magic plays a central role in everyday life, where the simple sound of a flute seems to enable a human soul to reach no less than the inaccessible heights of the Andes, where the condor, the messenger of the gods, transports the dreams of the Incas to the great beyond.
Let's go over the headlines again before signing off. Foreign Minister Diana Mondino confirms intention to resume flights to the Malvinas Islands. Transport unions to strike tomorrow and the day after against Milei's policies. Ecuador seeks help from Colombia due to the ongoing energy crisis. Bolivian government denies former President Evo Morales was a victim of an assassination attempt. Argentina stops printing its own banknotes. And sports, for the second consecutive year, Argentina's Emiliano Martinez, El Dibu, wins the Goalkeeper of the Year award at the Ballon d'Or Awards. And with that, we come to the end of today's edition of RAE, Radio Difusión Argentina al Exterior, which was operated by Sergio Ríos and presented by yours truly, Fernando Farias, on this Tuesday, October 29, 2024. Thank you very much for listening. Join us tomorrow for a new program. Hasta mañana.